We're going to read a talk from July 26, 2002. It is from Shlavei HaSulam, Volume 3, page 166. It's a talk from July 22. The purpose of creation is to delight the creatures. To delight the creatures cannot be anything less than the degree of the Creator. The Creator cannot do anything that is beneath its own degree, its own level. Therefore, the act can only be one. There can only be one act. If it is to do something outside of himself, it has to be still in quality like him. Therefore, when he created the Creator, the creature, he created them in adhesion, complete, eternal, exactly like himself. And in order for the creature to attain that sensation, who is, what he is, where he is, who he belongs to, who he's equal to, he has to know this situation fully. And he has to know it out of his own nature, of the opposite situation, from existence, from absence. Otherwise, he'll not recognize his own situation. Therefore, he has to go through all the stages that are the opposite of perfection, of eternity, of adhesion, in fact, in act and in thought, in mind, to actually see them and feel them and know them from the side of existence from absence and then existence from existence. And then the difference in his sensation in existence from existence and existence from absence, meaning from the side of the Creator and from the perspective of the creature, to let him recognize the evil and observations. What is this recognition of evil? It's not that he feels bad, it's that he is less than the Creator. And then he'll see that perfection can only be in a situation of existence from absence, which becomes again, existence from absence, existence from existence, meaning there cannot be completeness in the will to receive, because the will to receive is enclosed within itself. It feels within itself, it attains within itself, and therefore it is limited in quality and quantity. That Rabash calls it settling for little. Meaning every time it attains something, he settles for what it attains, and he doesn't want to expand on it. Because expansion of the borders means that now he has to suffer that he doesn't have something. And when he suffers that he doesn't have something, he goes out and attains it. So if a person is told, let's give you what you want, and you'll never have to look again for more satisfaction or for anything better, he immediately agrees with it. Everyone can see it on himself. But each need that is satisfied comes from above, by society, by books, by the Creator. A person gets more will to receive in addition. But he would never leave the degree of the beast, because it's painful. So what for? If we could be satiated in anything beastly, food, sex, warmth, peace, in its minimal state, if we could receive it, we would remain in that situation, and we would be unable and unwilling to get out of our own nature, because the will to receive would not let us do that. It would remain in the same situation. It would freeze its situation. But because Providence pushes us to a person cannot reach perfection within the will to receive. He has to get out of his shell and live not with, in order to receive, but in order to bestow, with an aim outside of himself. And this way there'll never be any limitation, not in the greatness, in the size of the vessel, not in the reception of the bounty. Rabash writes that it's not that the idea is the means to attain it. That the means to attain it is only love thy neighbor as thyself. Because this way a person learns how to how opposite he is from his from the Creator. Therefore the exercises that a person gets to do in this world are what hastens his development. And then a person knows better in mind and heart how limited he is. And he comes to a situation that he wants progress with the right desire. He comes to recognize himself. He lives outside of himself. He never lives inside himself anymore. But the sensation of his self is only the basic point from which he exits and feels that which is outside of him. Only this way a person begins to distance from his center point and expands his reception to infinity. And here Rabar speaks about faith above reason, below reason and within reason. We see that the whole world lives with faith within reason. So why is it called faith? Faith is the force that forces men to act. What he feels, what he understands, what he accepts as a fact, that's called fact. That's called reason. And only reason lets him, if only reason gives him the strength to act, it's called faith within reason. That's how man acts. And it doesn't matter that his reason is based on someone else's nonsense, that they tell him of things that are completely untrue. But if he accepts them within his mind, and he absorbs them, he receives them, so it's a fact for him. And that's how he acts on that. There are many such stigmas that the world follows, and the world accepts them as fact, as truth. Faith below reason is when a person doesn't know what he's told. These are not facts, but he takes a condition and doesn't even examine it. It's usually education, upbringing. He doesn't criticize what he's told, but he just keeps it. Without any criticism. So if a person accepts things this way, he doesn't activate his reason in any way. But everything that he decides, that he takes beneath reason, is accepted by him as fact. And that's how a person acts. We usually call it fanaticism. Things that we, that are accepted without self-criticism, they can be things that cannot be examined, or things that we decide in advance that whatever happens, we take them as such. It might be linked with public opinion, but a great deal of humanity's decisions are taken below reason, below criticism, and we live fine with it. So, below reason and within reason, in a certain mixture, eventually the whole of mankind uses these two approaches for life. What a person gets is knowledge from outside, from the outside, and how he acts accordingly. It is either below reason or within reason. There's no person that doesn't have both. It depends on the ratio between those two observations. And there's something called faith above reason. This is really not understood. It's above our nature, above our mind. evil person goes into a bank and asks for the cashier for $1,000, and he sees the cashier gave him $999, what should he do? He can shut his eyes and not see how much money has been collected, take the money and go. That's below reason, without criticism. He can look at it and see that it is indeed $999 and believe his own eyes. And then he can agree or disagree, but to know that he is in a situation that he is receiving only $999. And there can be a situation that a person sees that he received $999, but he doesn't decide to agree with it or not mind it or complete it elsewhere, compliment for it elsewhere. But he takes those $999 as though they were $1,000, 100%, because he subdues his reason before the reason of the cashier. This is a great deal of work. A person has to exit himself, give up his own mind, and accept the mind of the giver. You can't just do it with an inner trick. It is called that a person is going above reason. This may sound easy, but it's impossible to do. For that, you have to know the mind of the giver himself. You have to cling to him, to have great faith in him, to have greater faith in him than in my own reason. A person needs a lot of supporting systems and effort and preliminary effort to come to the decision that you can go above reason. And that's only if we're talking about $1, which is the difference between his mind and my own mind. And that's just about $1. But if it would be the opposite, that I would ask for $1,000 and would get only $1 and the $999 are missing, and a person then would have to behave like he received $1,000, and it's not an act, but he really has to compliment in his mind and in his heart as though he received the full $1,000. So a person needs satisfaction, not something imaginary, but a feeling that will satisfy him instead of the beastly sensation effects. It is impossible to attain these things unless a person really attains the sensation, the spiritual sensations that fill him and give him this satisfaction. It's not some kind of decision that a person decides that from now on he'll behave this way, or that from now on he'll play a game with himself. You can't express it and you can't do it. Therefore, these acts are something that we slowly begin to understand, but before we actually begin to do them, it takes a while. If you think you can, if a person thinks that he can do something above reason, he slowly sees that these things entail exit outside of man's self. How does a person do it? In this world, we see and feel, first of all, and then we decide and do. It's in good things or in bad things. It can be by sweets or by beats, by beating. But whatever happens, I use my own mind. There is never a situation when a person takes someone else's mind without deciding to replace it with his own opinion, his own mind. You can't explain what happens in spirituality. A person cannot attain a degree, the reason of the degree, before he cancels his own reason. If he receives, observes something as higher than him, it is not higher than him. The difference in degrees, between degrees in spirituality, the person replaces both the verses of the heart and those of the mind. So how is it possible to acquire a higher degree with the current mind and heart? Every degree that is higher than me is felt as infinite, because I can't perceive it. It's more than my vessel. So it's felt infinite, as infinite. What can I do? Only if a person receives strength from above, which helps him to accept instead of the mind and heart, accept the mind and heart of the upper degree, and then he works on the attainment of the fulfillment in those. Question: how does a person in the time of preparation prepare himself for work above reason? During the preparation, a person only learns how limited it is, and he works with his vessels within reason, and he learns how incapable he is of getting rid of it, the system that is within reason. How to work above reason? You begin to want it only toward the barrier. But and the children of Israel side by reason of the bondage is really only before the spiritual attainment, before the exit. That then you want only that. Meaning only to go above reason becomes the actual goal before his eyes. Because he sees that otherwise he's limited in himself. He settles for what he's got. You can fill him up and stuff him up, and he'll never get up there to a goal that's really more sublime than settling for some kind of satisfaction. There's no possibility to grow if this system is not acquired, method is not acquired, faith above reason, that you want to attain a desire from outside of me. We don't feel it, but if each of us could add to himself what each and every other member has, their desires, how much it would enrich all of us. In our current situation, we can't believe that they're great, so we don't mind it so much. But if you could really see that each of them receives at least as much as he does, if he could feel how much more he can acquire compared to what he gets right now, to his livelihood, to his attainment, to his knowledge, then he would really want to attain adhesion with others. That's why Rabash writes that the love of man is a means from which a person slowly begins to feel how much the attainment of the vessel outside of him is necessary for the attainment of completeness and eternity. What is in self infinity? It's not something you acquire. It means that a person gets an infinite ability to absorb, and then he is fulfilled infinitely. His vessels are not limited in any way, and the satisfaction also. The exit above reason, the screen becomes infinite. So it turns out that man sort of overturns his point, his vessel. He brings it out, the vessel becomes opposite to itself. It's called that the heart of stone is reversed in order to bestow, because it was built in order to receive by the light. And when it turns into, in order to be like the light, then it has the same nature. Question: does above reason change the beastly sense? No. Above reason is a spiritual law. We're talking only about spirituality. In this world, it doesn't exist. In our beastly desires, in our five senses, we cannot keep above reason. Above reason means only the spiritual vessel, the sixth sense, toward the upper light, toward the Creator, toward desires that are outside the pleasures of this world. In this world, matter remains the same matter. It enjoys and suffers the same way. He can be a great Kabbalist, but if he's pinched, he'll cry. The beastly vessels remain the same. They don't change. We're talking only about the sixth sense. That's the only one that changes. The five senses of the body do not change. They remain the same nature. Nature doesn't change. Your body and the body of Rabbi Shimon are the same body. You can change organs, you can implant organs. All the attainments and the corrections that we speak of, and this method of above reason in order to bestow, with the screens and everything, it's only about the spiritual desire, meaning the sixth sense that a person acquires, that he develops from the point in the heart. A person cannot see above reason and hear above reason. It's irrelevant. Above reason that comes through scent, smell, taste, sight, goes into my beastly senses, either below reason or within reason. But the point in the heart that you begin to work with, because that's the point of contact with the light, if we want to develop it, there's a law of development there that works only above reason, outside of itself. It doesn't grow in and of itself. It grows only if you exit it. Question. Why does a person keep wanting to examine where he is? Within reason, above reason. It's not that he wants to examine, but he slowly learns that that's what he's doing. And this way he sees how he relates to godliness. So by that, a person sees if he's receiving reality correctly. We receive reality with our five senses. If we want to receive it as it actually is, with the sixth sense, meaning not as it felt in our five openings, but how it really is, then we can only receive it according to the law of equivalence of form. That was the end of the reading section. Now, it'll be Rav's words. Now, like yesterday, there'll be feedback on this text because it's a preparation for a book. So, Neri is saying that this is better than the reading section yesterday. Gadi says that an attempt to teach what faith above reason is for a person who's not used to it, that's very difficult. It's hard to even listen to it. Yudha says it's okay. It depends on the appreciation of the author. Leo says that there are too many subjects put together. So I was asking, maybe we should take each talk and cut it up into its own, into separate topics. Leo says that it's hard to follow the whole thing. I says it's something we discuss someday. But Leo says the thing is that Rabbah speaks of many things in one article, so it's a problem. He answers, if there's something more precise, concise, then it's easy for a person to concentrate on that. Gilad says, it looks like parts of a suit, but it's not sewn together. You have to collect several articles that relate, or portions that relate to the same topic. Rav says, it'll never be this way. Let's say this, if the text remains as it is, without cutting it, without tasting it in any way, we can't do that. We leave it as is. What kind of changes in words, perhaps rude words or redundant words, the basis will remain the same. It's everyday language. But the logic, the logical flow of the talk is missing between the sections. And we need some kind of contact. Contact in content. Rav says there are too many jumps. Avil says that the whole charm of these texts is to leave as they are. If you speak faith, if you seek for faith above reason, love of friends, you get it in a lighter language. There is complete detachment between the parts, various parts of the article, but that's the way it is. We don't have to change it into anything it's not. Those are talks about inner work. Very roughly based on the article. And it has to be there for every person who begins to study. And then it answers many things. Isn't the language to street language, everyday language? Rav is complaining about his language, that it's too mundane. That he uses the wrong words here and there, wrong grammar, incorrect grammar. He says, when I listen to it, it bothers me. Maybe we should somehow make it smoother. Or are you comfortable with it? They say that they're used to it. Gadi asks, who is it intended for? It's intended for a reader. A reader called Gadi Atias of Yisrofel. Neil Kuevner, it doesn't matter. It's not for us. It is for a reader who can understand it, but he comes here for the first time, he opens the book for the first time, he's never been anywhere of us, but it's as though he understands it already. Because I think that in 6 months or a year from now, people from the outside will be in a situation where it'll be close to them. Maybe they won't understand the terms, the above reason, below reason. They'll understand it from the text, but they'll have the inner preparation. It's fine, it's rational, it makes sense. There will be this preparation. it'll speak to him like a daily newspaper. God says, if we assume that the reader will understand it, then there's nothing more to add. But he still thinks it does need to be polished. Leo says that if we look for more respectable words, he says, if we want to go for a broader audience, then you can use it. I remember that I heard someone speak Abba Evin, and I didn't understand a word, and he was speaking Hebrew. Tal says, we think like students, and we can't stop thinking like students. Tal says, I'm not talking about difficulty. I'm asking something different. I'm saying he has, the reader, an inner willingness to understand what the book says, and he opens it, and he understands that this is about him, and this is what he needs. Say he's come to that level already. Not like us, more developed. Let's say something changes in the public, and it'll be like that. So I'm asking not about this. I'm asking about a completely different aspect. Isn't this language... He didn't finish. Neil says it has to be in a more pleasant language, more elegant, like physical instead of beastly and stuff like that. Getty wants to ask a question. Why do we have to assume that there's someone who is so ready to receive it? Paul says, I'll tell you why. Because all these words in these places that I'm talking of, or speaking of, they come because I don't know the language. I would use better words, more precise. But because my language isn't rich and I don't understand it, sometimes I don't remember. So I put in words that are not exactly, you understand me already, but as to me, I would change them. So when I hear it, I think that there should be a different word here. Gadi wants to know, why are we relating to someone who is so ripe, so ready for this? Why do we assume that there is such a person? Because if we're talking about that kind of person, it doesn't matter how you speak to him, he'll receive it anyhow. So why are we relating to that, to those people? God says if there aren't people who are ready for it, we don't need a book. I'm just talking about the quality of text. God says we should look for more precise words because a new reader will not know what to look for. What you actually mean. Gilad says that someone has to sit with you with a greater vocabulary in Hebrew and try and make precisions in the words. But if a person does it by himself without you, it will completely lose the meaning, the message. Amir wants to say two things. First, the words have to be more precise. And also, there are things here that collide with other things that we learn. because he's told that he has to go outside of himself. And in other places, we learn about inner work. So, how do these things sit together? And there's another problem that a person likes the material and he begins to study. So the question is, how does he advance? Should he look to his rabbi or to his friend? Does the text make him look above or look for a friend who speaks to him in his own eye to eye, kind of? Perhaps he should raise his head and look up. David says you have to get in the sensation that it's something that's greater than what they have. And that means that the language has to be not so mundane. It has to be very polished. Gaudi says that when Rav speaks in Russian, he says things that are a lot finer, a lot more subtle than in Hebrew. I was asking, when you translate me from Russian to Hebrew, do you find other words and then does the language become richer? I still have the same problems with language, but it's still richer. I like the things we translate from Russian to Hebrew better than what you say directly in Hebrew. The translations are more appealing. But it's a lot of work. You have to know how to translate from Russian to Hebrew in a way that the text will stand nicely, will be constructed nicely. Rav says that's what we've got. Now we're going to read from Baal HaSulam, Pri Chacham, Igrot, Letters. This one is page 17. To my dear glorious friend. It's been 4 months that I've been hoping to enjoy your written work. And finally, there's a letter before me. That is long and insinuative, and I have found no words of value scribbled even between the lines. What harm have I done to you to be unworthy of knowing anything of your situations, although you know how much they concern me? I also wonder why you haven't noticed to what we said that you will not write to me anything that is enveloped in florid style, that I detest them. That are so common here with your words, and I cannot find you in any of them. I will ask you from today and onwards to write me some knowledge, and you will write it attentively to interpret it simply, like one person speaks to another who is not a prophet, and place it correctly. In other words, explain it correctly so that there will be no room for mistake or even consideration. And it will not consider the language, but the easiness of the explanation. And he should not speak highly in any way, because in my house there is no entrance to foreigners. And when you write to me novelties in the Torah, clarify them to me without any names of Patsufim in the books, only in everyday language. Because I, for myself, am very accurate, meticulous about this. And I bring it to complete simplicity, because that is near and true to clarify something real. Because when I address things in the names of the books, there immediately comes a desire in me to know the thoughts of the books. And therefore, my mind drifts away from the goal. And this is experimented for me, tested. Furthermore, when I attain something in the books, I tend to mix lie with truth. Therefore, when I want to clarify something that I need, I am very careful about not looking in the books behind and before. And also when I write, and I do not use any florid language, so that I will always be ready and pure to find a truthful thing without any mixture and without any aid for anything external. And only then the palate tasteth its food. That's the end of the letter. It's just a section of it. Rav's words. So we listen to this letter from page 17 in Igot Kodesh letter. He says that he prefers for himself, and he recommends to students, if they speak among themselves or write to him, to write very simply, as close as they can to how they feel it naturally, how it is placed inside them, how it formulates inside them. Besides that, he says that when he studies when he seeks out the goal during the study, then that keeps him from feeling it naturally close to him. So much so that when he studies, you might say that he interprets these things simply and sensitively for himself. But when he clarifies his own situations for himself, he never uses the words of the books, but only his inner books. And he even refrains from looking in the books, because they can confuse him, because they're written in a different language. So we see that there is an external language which a person uses to speak to others, and that's the language of the books. And there's a more inner language, emotional one, that to the extent that a person is tied to it and searches through it to bond with spirituality, the better. It is better. It is more correct. And during class, when we study and are immersed in the language of Kabbalah, Patsufim, Sfirot, we shouldn't dress our emotions directly in these words, but to be more, to turn more to the search for the purpose and the strength that we need to get out of this study according to our inner things. Question. What is this for us in the books. That necessitates a person to search. Love. I read books. As a beginner, you can understand it. I read some books, and I don't understand what it says there. In Kabbalah, it's not like other books. In regular books, I read something in my own level. Perhaps I don't know it yet, but I read it and I learn it. There's no problem here. If I don't know it now, I'll know it in 2 months, or 2 years, or 20 years. But somehow, it's just a question of time. It's just a person who wrote something, but he didn't have to change himself in any way, and then write physics or math to me, or medicine, whatever. It's just a person who acquired knowledge, and that's it. So I learn the language that he writes, and I slowly acquire it. And I use this language for myself as well. And it becomes very clear to me. We have a psychologist in Russia. He was here in Pesach. And here he writes to me letters. In the beginning he would write such letters that I couldn't understand one word. Afterwards he began to write differently. So I could see that he was talking about very simple things, just about emotions. But I can learn the language and find in it higher precision. It's good to use that language, not the language of emotions. But that's good in any science of this world. In spirituality, there are several problems. When I begin to study, I learn something that someone with a different nature wrote. He looks at the world differently. He's an alien. His mind works differently. His values are completely not my own. His perception, perspective, everything is different. The content. When I read his words, from my own degree to his degree, it's two worlds. I can accept his words, but I don't understand a word of them. Bala Sulam says, what choice is there here? I can't learn a language and actually use it to be as my own mental, emotional language. If I don't cross over to the spiritual vessel, I can't say a vessel. And imagine a spiritual vessel instead of a cup. Correct the desire and aim to bestow a screen returning light. I'll tell you 1,000 words, but it's not in me. That's why Bala Sulam says that. Because our whole study is in order to clarify, scrutinize spiritual concepts and attract them to us so that the surrounding light will act and correct us and bring me to the same place from which the author writes. For that, I need to be tied as personally as possible with what's written here. So it says, forget all the smart stuff. On the contrary, be as less tied with language as possible. Relate to what you're studying with your heart, with your expectations. There also has to be some study, just intellectual study, because otherwise you will not have a language at all. You won't be able to relate to it. But once you do have some kind of grip on the text, you have to relate to it emotionally. Once you have some grip, it's not the technical details that you need to grasp. It's that you need to concentrate yourself on the correction of your heart, and you should not be distracted from that even for a minute. As he says, that you should constantly think about the essence that's demanded, the most important thing that's demanded of the Torah, which is the light that reforms. A person is not, doesn't look for, in the text, he doesn't look for the points, he only looks in the text for the points that he can contact, not through his mind. Through his mind, it's really not worthwhile to even read. He says in the letter, when you write to me, just write from your own heart. He says, when I read the books, what happens to me is that I get distracted. My mind wanders to intellectual stuff. So when I want to clarify something, I'm very careful not to look in the books. So the approach should be as personal and purposeful as possible. Rabash once told me that it was just in the very beginning. I came to him the first time. I went with him to the doctor. He had a problem with his ear. Afterwards, I was with him for a month in the hospital with his ear. It was a Friday, I remember. We asked the doctors to move it to Sunday after Shabbat. But they said that he had such infection and there was they suspected it might be cancer even. So it was a Friday, so we asked to postpone it. So Thursday night we got there for the last check. He said, there's no choice. We have to give him very strong antibiotics. And it's very strong. He can't take it at home. I said, we'll start Sunday. No, immediately. Even now. So we got to the next morning, Friday. Yep. Friday, like today. Like this year. So, 2 months before that, or something like that, I went with him the first time. He didn't know how to get there. He had to be there early. So after a class in the morning, it just worked out that I said, I can take him there. So on the way, it was the first time I spoke to him freely during the ride. So I told him that during the descent, we work with the mind, and in the ascent, we work with the heart. So, how can I tie them together? By the time I got there, I read a lot. So, I see in the books that people tie them together. And I can't do that. I'm either immersed in emotions, or I'm in a descent, and then maybe I'm more intellectual. How can I use both? Then he said to me, he recommended that I write my situations and then read them later. Yet, in the meantime, it would be helpful. That's it. I'm giving it to you the way I heard it then, as though I never heard anything else afterwards. Just knowledge. Clean. Question, what does it mean, florid style? What is florid style in Kabbalah? Well, let's say that it's dressing something.